We are back. Welcome. You have joined Two Cantors, and we are at the bar. We have walked into the bar. You are with us. We're happy to have you. Penny, we're kicking it old school. We're back to our original format. We're audio only. We're a traditional podcast again. It's nice. It's nice to be back. Before we continue, let me set things up. Let me introduce ourselves. I am Matt Axelrod of Scotch Plains, New Jersey, but I am the executive director of the Cantors Assembly, and I am here with the Melodious.
Melodious.
Yes.
I am Penny Myers, and I am Chazan Rabbi. I am
bi-clerical. You're bi-clerical?
I'm bi-clerical, and I am calling from actually, really, truthfully, balmy Buffalo. It's going to be like 70 today.
Yeah, everything up is down. Chicago, Minnesota, they're having, no winters or something. They're having all this warm temperature. Welcome to the world of global warming, climate change.
It's actually, Buffalo is now the Florida of Canada.
Buffalo is the floor. I had to think about that for once. And New Jersey is the, I don't know either.
Right. Hey, Matt, said title. My title is I'm the chairperson of the Great Lakes and Rivers region of the Cantors Assembly.
That is awesome. So that is.
That's awesome, thanks.
Isn't that special?
Oh my gosh. Are we allowed to say that? Isn't that
but that and 290 still gets you on the subway. our sort of change in, both of us have undergone a change in status and, sort of our affiliations and so forth, as we've talked about. But that brings us very nicely to what I wanted us to talk about today, which is what it's like to be a, Penny, you said it.
A Jew in the pew.
A Jew in the pew. So because neither Penny nor I have regular pulpits, we get to experience going to services when we do go to services. I'm going to speak for myself.
Thank you.
Okay, but when we go to services, we get to experience that as regular people. And I
like how you say regular.
Because we were certainly irregular people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because you're regular.
Right.
Basic.
Well, I mean, the first thing, it was very, very strange at first attending synagogue at my synagogue where I was no longer the cantor after over three decades.
Were you heckling the new cantor?
I certainly was, and gladly so, when I wasn't on my cell phone. But
during Shabbos, you are just evolved.
I'm pleading chamishi on that one.
That's fair.
But, the first thing I was thinking is that whatever the services were like, I was going to have to sit through them as opposed to work through them, as opposed to sing and be on and daven through them. And that is a completely new experience, isn't it?
Oh my gosh. So, I can't even go there.
How do you find that? I mean, you have to be a participant, a congregant, I could cynically say an audience member.
No, don't. No.
Okay, I won't. But yeah, so what was your experience with that?
Oh my gosh. First of all, I've always, whenever I travel, no matter whether it's for the Cantors Assembly or on vacation with family, I make it my habit to go to a synagogue of any denomination. It's rare that I will let, if it's a colleague, know that I'll be there.
Right. Why?
I like to be incognito, but I recognize that that could stress a colleague out. So I think I'm going to change how that goes. Mm-hmm. But the first, it's never easy because you know how the proverbial sausage, kosher sausage, is made.
It's a strange metaphor, but yes.
And that's right. And Not that we're plugging any kind of sausage or meat, but we're always happy to.
But Jimmy D's Smoked Sausage, if you would like to sponsor this podcast, please get in touch with us.
Yes, that would actually go very well with our old fashions. But, you know, I found it really uncomfortable because, you know, I've been in the pulpit for over 20 years and recognizing that there's someone else doing what I have, and I say, been called to do, I will say that I get schmilkies. It's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. Not only is it sort of, you know, all this psychologically hard and transition, it could be physically difficult based on where you are. Like the pews, the Jews in the pews are often physically uncomfortable to sit.
Oh my God, I feel so bad for every congregant.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. For that, you know, even for like 20 minutes, like I'm just ready to go because I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, for high holidays, which is a whole separate thing, where we tend to actually still, you know, have pulpits and work because it's a different category. But for high holidays, I always say, I don't know how they do it. How do they sit in those seats for 3, 4, 5, whatever hours? It's just, it's insane.
You're doing service, like you're davening for 5 hours straight. I mean, I get Yom Kippur, but like still.
Well, no, but I mean, if one attends high holiday services, you get there at whatever it starts at, you know, 8:30, 9 in the morning, and it goes to what, like noon?
Here's the question. Do you use your cell phone on Yom Kippur?
I do not. There's no one to talk to. You guys are all busy. I text you, but nobody texts me back.
That's true. We're on silent mode. It's really, you're right. It's physically hard. And because, you know, knowing the matbea, the order of the service, and there are so many intrinsic rituals that are literally in our like marrow, mm-hmm. of when to rise and, you know, and this and that. And every congregation has a different, like, custom, and that our melodies
or vibe,
right, and that's that for me. The vibe is really hard. You know what I've gone to Orthodox synagogues, like the famous ones of wherever we are. So, like in Jerusalem, I'll go to the Great Synagogue and listen to.
Right,
you know,
but you can't sit with you can't that separate seating. You can't sit with your family.
Well, actually, I find that my family does sightseeing if they're there.
Oh, okay. So you don't go. So this is something for you, not for family. Okay.
Right. Yeah. So for an example, if I can say this, we were just in Sydney, Australia with our family, mm-hmm. and I went to the Great Synagogue of Sydney. And I don't mind, like I respect the customs of the place. I don't mind being modestly dressed, which is actually kind of unusual for me, like to have long sleeves and long dressed my ankles and a hat, but
it was an adjustment for me too to have those
wear a skirt.
Yeah.
Okay. And I gotta tell you, I mean, for some reason, actually, I like sitting with the women. You can actually see better what's going on.
Are they full participants? Forgive me. I have not been in an Orthodox synagogue in decades, nor have I ever been sitting in the women's section. Are they full participants, or is it, you know, is it
they talk
stuff going on up there?
They're just schmoozing, and it actually bothers me.
Oh, so that's like regular, okay.
Yeah, and I'm like, you know, and I'm a guest, and I just, and people will come up to me, they don't recognize who I am or why I'm there, and tell them where I am, they ask me what I do, and then I tell them what I do, and then, oh my gosh, it's a Balagan. Like, they just want everything, and just... For some reason, in an Orthodox setting, I'm more comfortable as a Jew in the pew than I am at a conservative reform or reconstructing Judaism.
That's
which
really interesting and unexpected. I mean, I'm kind of blown away by that statement. I would not have envisioned that. I guess you are getting a full, pure davening experience.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, you know me, and I'm a fan of separate seating and a lot of that stuff. I'm a pure, you know, egalitarian Jew. But for those who do belong to that school of thought, mm-hmm. and they have certain rationales for why separate seating is called for, why it's a good idea, it sounds like it sounds like that's what you're saying, is that there's something to it in your case where it's just working for you.
Right. And also, because I know the conservative liturgy and the way our Siddur, our prayer book, because I served a Reformed synagogue, I've served a Reconstructionist synagogue and conservative shuls, which is a synagogue, it's like you know way too much.
Well, that's true. And a little knowledge is a bit, yeah. Absolutely.
Sitting next to people who are really tone deaf, and I will say this, like, I love when I'm davening on a bima, and I love hearing the participation and the cacophony, literally, but sitting in it, I just want to leave. Because, you know, as a chazan, as a cantor and a musician.
Well, it hurts the ears.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So my experience is, first of all, I will confess here and in this forum, I don't go to services regularly because
this is why we're different.
Right, that's right. Because I still am getting used to and appreciating my new schedule where I have weekends free and I work sort of business hours. And I'm kind of enjoying that change for now. But when I do attend services, I find that, you know, physically the pews can be a little uncomfortable. Sometimes there's a little measure of, I wish I had done that when I was up there.
Right.
You know, what a great idea. I could have done that. Why am I just learning about this now?
Or melodies. Or different melodies that, like, are interwoven that would detour from Nusach, which is like which is the traditional prayer modes, and integrating contemporary Jewish musician composers, and it's seamless, and I'm like, I wish I would have done that.
Yeah, which is a good argument for, I wish that when I was in the pulpit, or when, you know, for our colleagues who, you know, have regular pulpits, I wish there was some mechanism by which we could regularly attend each other's synagogues on some kind of trade-off basis, or, you know, just because to see what all of us are doing or see what our colleagues are doing on a weekly routine basis, you can get like those insights, you can get those great ideas and bring them back to your congregation and integrate what you want to do. It's too bad that we sort of had to wait until that wasn't available to us anymore before we learned all this good stuff.
Here's my question to all of our colleagues out there. How, you know, I always wonder, because for
call
me...
Call the number at the bottom of your screen to phone... sorry. There is no number at the bottom of your screen.
But colleagues, you're welcome to, you know, donate or buy us a drink.
Right.
You know, I really wonder if it... I know for me, it would make me sweat a little bit, literally, when I found out that a colleague was visiting Buffalo. And yes, Matt, people do visit Buffalo. There's a resurgence, but I wonder if...
Well, they drive through Buffalo on the way to get somewhere.
Okay, that's
all right, anyway, be nice, because I'm going to have to edit out whatever it is you're about to say.
No, what I'm saying is that I wonder if our colleagues, whether they're ones that we know or the ones that we don't know, if they know prior that we're coming, or if they don't know, if it makes them feel a little bit unnerved.
It's a great question. I think it depends on the specific colleague, it's a great question because I was just thinking about that randomly the other day about if I attended a colleague's shul, synagogue on, you know, Shabbat morning or something like that, would I give him a heads up? I'd probably hedge my bet and say something like, I may come or something like that, just to give the sort of passive, this may happen, but I'm not committing to anything.
And then you show up.
Right. So a couple things. First of all, the one good reason to do that is I would want to find out, like, if I would want to go and hear my colleague Dov, and I would want to find out what the show was like and services are like, if there was a big, you know, a bar mitzvah that morning or some other big event or a class service, which is fine. I don't necessarily need to go and be a part of that. And it will be longer and it's, you know, celebrating with people in a congregation and a community that I don't know.
Right.
So that would all kind of be lost on me. So I would want to kind of get the heads up to say, oh, well, it's a big bar mitzvah this week. Maybe you want to come another week. And the other thing is, and this is what I wanted to ask you, often this is a perfect opportunity for a colleague to say, oh, you're going to be there. Would you like to daven? Would you like to do shacharit? Would you like to lead something? Would you like a part in the service? Which is, you know,
fine.
I don't think it's just
very
a courtesy.
I think
it's a really nice, sincere offer. And I haven't been in the situation enough to know what my answer should be, but I'm inclined to say, no, thank you. I just want to sit and listen.
And be a Jew in the pew. And so I will tell you that, especially here in Buffalo, when I, you know, we do affiliate with a synagogue, with a conservative shul here in Buffalo, but if I visit, like, where my parents affiliate here in Buffalo, which is a different shul, you know, I always let my colleagues know that I'm coming, and I don't want them to make an announcement that I'm present or invite me up for an aliyah or do anything like that, because it makes me feel uncomfortable, because I'm still getting used to being a Jew in the pew.
Mm-hmm.
I don't sit close. I like to sit a little back. But here's my question to you. Have you ever gone to a synagogue where there's no chazan, where there's no cantor?
Well, again, I haven't had a great deal of experience yet in my new
situation. I know, this is so new.
So since, you know, July, when I stepped off the pulpit and began this new job, no, I have not. However, I grew up in a shul like that. That's kind of where I got my start doing all this stuff as a kid and a teenager, because my synagogue growing up, my hometown synagogue, there was no cantor. It was lay people. And that's how I learned. I had some local mentors in other synagogues in the area that I knew, but we never had, and that synagogue still does not have a regular full-time cantor. That's how I kind of learned, just by leading services as a young person.
I have not had that
experience as an adult.
So as a Jew in the pew, attending a synagogue or a shul where there is no chazan or no cantor, mm-hmm. that for me, being a Jew in the pew, is even all that more difficult, because I know too much.
Yep.
And it is one of the most, I'm going to say, like, it's very difficult, because I am fiercely loyal to the cantorate and recognizing the incredible roles that we play as chazanim, as cantors, in people's lives and the myriad of things that we do. It makes me a little sad when I go to a congregation that does not have a chazan part-time or what, and does not have a cantor, because even lay people, when they daven, it's really incredible that they're able to do that.
I mean, even if they do a really good job.
Exactly. It makes me, you know, there's something, that ta'am, there's some taste, flavor, something, that it just feels like I'm missing something, because I know too much.
And the people in the congregation, they don't, you know it, they don't even know what they're missing.
Right.
This is like, all of this is available to you and you don't even know it.
Right. And that's just it. I mean, you know, for the Cantor's Assembly, one of our credos is singing is just the beginning. And for us, for Chazanim, singing is just such a small part of what we do. And there's some ruach, some spirit, and some, I don't even know what word, believe it or not, I'm actually speechless.
I can't believe it.
I know. I'm like, God, I need another cocktail.
everyone wants to listen to a podcast where one of the hosts is speechless.
I know, right? Which is unusual for me, for those who know me. But it's, you know, it makes me sad and angry, because I, you know, there's so much to be gained by having a cantor there, because of how we're trained and because of the, you know, it's just radically different when there's no cantor present, and it feels flat to me.
Right. But, and then, of course, contrast that with when you go to a synagogue of services and there is a chazan.
Yeah.
And it just must, it. I mean, I get to, you know, when I go to services, that's my experience. And it's just so nice to just sit there and sing along, to, in most cases, watch somebody play the guitar at a skill far above anything that I can do.
Me too.
And, it's fun to watch. It's also fun to watch the congregation, to look around and be a little bit diverse, and to watch the congregation respond, and to just watch the interaction, and how they respond to services.
Yes, and that's only for the people who actually like the clergy.
Right. Well, right. But who doesn't like clergy? Everyone loves clergy.
Everyone loves chazanim. That's why every pulpit has one.
Have you had any experiences? Where, I mean, obviously, I think that you have much more experience.
Been out of the pulpit.
Being a clergy tourist, let's say, than a Jew in the pew, clergy tourist. You've had more experience than I have. So have you had experiences where you've walked into a synagogue, just like as yourself, nobody knows, you know, who you are. Nobody, you know, says, wow, there's the regional chair of the Buffalo region of Janice. Oh, my God. And have you experience sort of the, hey, this synagogue is not warm and welcoming, or,
Yes. And you know, every synagogue, or I shouldn't say every, but most synagogues talk about engagement and, you know, connecting with one another. And I had an experience of late where there was, you know, there were not many people in the shul. I was welcomed by this lovely couple who, you know, introduce themselves to me, and nobody came up to me, and they were talking about their community being so warm and welcoming. And it, you know, usually when
I love the expression warm and welcoming, it's never welcoming and warm, it's always warm and welcoming.
So but the thing is that, you know, usually if I'm not feeling good spiritually and I go to shul, I would say 99% of the time, whether I'm a Jew in the pew or I'm davening, I always feel better. But that 1%, and this, you know, one of these experiences, I actually felt worse. I there was something missing for me, not only with not having a cantor, but also the constant, we're warm, we're welcoming, you know, from everybody, and you see it in the programs, and nobody comes up to you to welcome you. And that culture makes me feel really uncomfortable.
That's really interesting. That this whatever specific, you know, will not be named synagogue. I don't know what you're talking about, and we won't know. So not only was that the situation, but they go out of their way to say over and over again how warm and welcoming they are. They make a point of it. And then a guest walks into services and you were just, nobody talked to you.
Not even the rabbi. Like, you know, there, nobody.
About how many people were in attendance? I'm just curious. Was it a crowd? Was it a small group? What?
Well, there 30, was a 40? There was a bar mitzvah, and it was a small bar mitzvah. I was told by this lovely elderly couple who did welcome me, gave me a prayer book and a chumash, and that was it. And I stayed a little bit for the kiddush. There was about 40 or 50 people there, mostly for the bar mitzvah. I mean, it was obvious that people were looking at me, like wondering wondering, is this a new person?
Is it possible that the regulars, you know, the people who belong to the who would come every week, just looked at you and were like, she's, you know, a guest of the bar mitzvah and.
But still, why wouldn't you? Yeah. Why wouldn't you go up to someone? Like, that made me realize that whenever I am davening in a pulpit, to always make it now my practice to go up to people. I mean, generally I do anyway, just because I don't want anyone to feel, God forbid.
Well, it's your personality. I mean, I think it's safe to say that both you and I are people who really welcome and seek out the connection to other people.
Especially when they're sitting alone.
Correct.
Yeah. Yep. And they're, you don't recognize them.
You know, this makes me think of, you know, like, well, you know, when you said, well, because this happened to me, I would make it a point to do X, Y, and Z when I got the chance, because I'm aware of it. This makes me think of, you know, like undercover boss or something. You know, it's an undercover clergy that you go in as, you know, incognito, and you just scout things out, and you're like, you know, oh, this place was great, or this place, you know, didn't welcome me or what. And you know, then you send him a grade afterwards to say, you know, I'm Rabbi Cantor Penny Myers. I was a guest at your synagogue on such and such a date. Here's where you, you know, need great improvement.
A lot of synagogues have like a membership, they do have membership chair people, but they also have what they call engagement committees. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking, you know, look through the program, and, you know, I want to see like how those names on the program of, you know, of people in positions of so-called, you know, engagement are mentioned or pointed out in the congregation. And this is what happened. It was so, like, it was just so disconnected. And, you know,
I'm surprised they were even there at services. Usually all the committee people and, you know, the executive boards, usually they're not the ones who even attend services.
It made me feel like it made me feel bad. It made me feel really bad. I felt worse, you know, when I left, and I was feeling
the opposite of spirituality.
Yeah, and spirituality means so many things, so many people. But, you know, it taught me that, it taught me a lesson. Well, not really, because I do talk the talk and I walk the walk. It made me sad. It did. Mm-hmm. And they had like an engagement person present, who's in their title is engagement, and that person was looking at me but didn't even come up to me.
That's crazy. So you even knew who it was. It was like, maybe as engagement.
And that's person, in that person's waiting, title.
He was waiting for you to go up to, hi.
Actually, I did.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I'm new here, I'm visiting, you know?
And so what happened?
I don't know. We had a brief conversation. I mean, it wasn't.
Wow, he's good at his job.
I know, right? Engagement. And the thing is, you know, every congregation, especially post-pandemic, there's not many congregations who are growing. You know, being a Jew in the pew and just, you know, you learn so much from a different perspective, and it's hard and painful. And seeing colleagues up there, it's joyous. And you never know what they're gonna do. And watching them daven is just, you know, it makes me so happy for them.
I can't, I mean, now that I've kind of gotten used to this a little bit more, my personal plan is to make more of an effort to be a Jew in the pew and not just a Jew at home. I not just a Jew in the pew in one place, but to be a Jew in many pews.
Well, that was, so when I became chairperson of the Great Lakes and Rivers region, which is
the that three times now.
I know. Well, I'm very proud of this title. And I became that chairperson like a few months before the pandemic. And one of my, part of my mission, and it's the most spread out region. So it's Buffalo to Michigan to all the way down to Louisville, Kentucky. One of my goals was to visit all my colleagues wherever they were, and then the pandemic happened, and I didn't get a chance to do that. And watching online, for all of those who are not chazanim or rabbis who are listening to this, you got to get to shul.
It was fantastic technology,
people
may know that I was a huge proponent of it, and I think it would
really
it served its purpose, but it's.
Right.
One reason why it was so effective is when it was needed and when people were not able to be in the synagogue, and so we had live stream and video, the service was intended towards the video. You were there as the as sitting at home watching, and the service was beamed at you, and it felt different. Now, you know, services are live streamed, but it's a camera that's up on wherever mounted. And you're just watching a feed of what's going on in the sanctuary and all the people there, and it's just not the same feeling. This is actually a great
This should be another podcast
about good topic about
Write it down.
Change in virtual live stream services and so forth. But
write it on your cocktail napkin.
All right, I'm writing it right now.
Because my hands are full right now.
Well, I'm already done. I've already gone through two drinks while I've been sitting here with you.
You're upright.
I know. So listen, we're coming to the end. We talked all about being a Jew in the pew, but it's really nice being two cantors in a bar.
Yes, I know. In an open bar.
Yeah, so it's nice that we've gotten back together and we're sitting and doing our old fashions. We will be back. We will have another episode. Please do join us. Until that time comes, the next time we get together,
the drinks are on us.